This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
I'll take off my rose-colored glasses now.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. I said earlier this week there were signs the price of oil might continue to drop. What I meant to say was oil's going to climb $8 in 24 hours. It's back above $130 a barrel this morning. All because of a comment by the head of the European Central Bank. He suggested the bank might raise interest rates. Whenever that happens, or rates fall in the U.S., the dollar tends to lose strength. And when that happens, the price of oil shoots up. Still, mostly gains in the overseas stock markets. In Asia, shares finished about 1% higher. The European markets are up a fraction so far. Wall Street had its best day since mid-April. The Dow gained 213 points to 12,604. The NASDAQ added 46, and the S&P 500 was up 2%, 26 points, to 1,404. The big climate change bill in the Senate looks to be dead. Supporters say they don't have enough votes to pass it today. So that means they'll look to the next Congress with a new president in office. Sam Eaton reports from our sustainability desk.
There's a simple reason so many companies and special interest groups came to Washington this week for the Senate's debate on the Lieberman-Warner Climate Security Act.
When you put a lot of money on the table, a lot of people show up.
That's Ray Kopp with the energy think tank Resources for the Future. He says the bill could end up costing big emitters trillions of dollars if they can't clean up their emissions and have to buy pollution permits instead. And that spawned a lobbying frenzy as everyone from Dow Chemical to big utilities try to bend the rules in their favor. General Electric is pushing for big federal payouts to upgrade power plants with its own equipment. Others hope to expand the number of permits they can buy. One study says these side deals could set back any meaningful cuts in U.S. greenhouse gases by several decades. But lobbyist Scott Siegel says that's democracy at work.
As I tell my clients and as they tell me, everyone is well advised to have a seat at the climate change table.
He says when you're talking about a bill that would essentially reorder the U.S. economy, few players are willing to stay silent. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
The world's largest and oldest contemporary art fair is underway in Switzerland. Despite these economic times, the art market is actually doing pretty well. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Art Basel is a scene, but it's also a place to see. There are aisles and aisles of sculpture, painting, and installations that collectors tour in a frenzy. More than 300 galleries participate, and some 60,000 people stop by. Stephanie Smith, with the Lehman Maupin Gallery based in New York, says sales are strong, but the buyers she's seeing are a bit different from art fairs past.
We've noticed less American collectors this year, but we've had a lot of international collectors, Russian, some from Singapore, and, you know, just a broad range internationally.
The gallery's neon collection and works by a Japanese painter and Korean sculptor sold out on day one. Some works brought in record prices, but others can be had for just a few thousand dollars. Art Basel wraps up Sunday. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Yeah, but even the rich are defaulting on their mortgages. First, it was Ed McMahon. He's had health problems and hasn't been making payments on his $5 million home. Now, former boxer Evander Holyfield is in foreclosure on his $10 million mortgage. Holyfield's place has 109 rooms, including 17 bathrooms. Boy, that's an earful. This is the Morning Report for Friday, June 6th on Marketplace.org. European banks, it seems, are having an even tougher time than U.S. ones. A new report from an American think tank shows overseas banks have shouldered the bulk of the losses from the subprime problems. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
This will be galling news for the Europeans. The crisis was made in the U.S., with thousands of American subprime mortgage holders defaulting. But according to the Institute of International Finance, European banks have picked up the larger part of the tab. So far, they've lost $200 billion on debt securities, $34 billion more than their American counterparts. David Buick is with the BGC Group. He says it all goes to show how adroit the Americans have been at shifting their complicated financial products abroad.
Well, in the United States, of course, they are incredibly good at sales. When there is a secondary product to come out of, whether it's a derivative or a cash product, there is no peer in the realm like the United States of America doing it.
As the supposedly prudent Swiss now know to their cost, the largest subprime casualty of all has been Switzerland's largest bank, UBS. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Congress is getting involved in a fight over who sits on the board of a major railroad company. The company CSX controls 21,000 miles of train tracks in the U.S. A British hedge fund called TCI wants to take control of the board of directors of CSX. Jeremy Hobson explains.
TCI is shorthand for the Children's Investment Fund. The British fund gives some of its profits to children's charities. But in a letter this week to the Treasury Department, several U.S. senators called TCI an aggressive hedge fund from the Cayman Islands. The senator said an investigation is necessary to prevent a possible threat to national security. Nancy McClernand at the Organization for International Investment says that's way over the top.
Look. Absolutely, railroads are an important part of our infrastructure, but the issue at hand here has nothing to do with national security. TCI can't do anything on its own. That's the point. They are a minority investor, and that's all this is. This is a proxy fight.
A CSX spokesman said national security was not the company's concern, but he did say that TCI would cut capital investment and impede the growth of CSX. The two sides face off at a shareholder meeting later this month. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, the horse named Big Brown will try to make history. He's already won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness.
And they turn for home in the Preakness, and Big Brown has seized the lead, and he is pulling away. Big Brown's doing it again. He is disappearing from the field. He's in front.
Now it's on to the final Triple Crown race, the Belmont. Big Brown is the 2-5 favorite. A Triple Crown would be good for the business of horse racing, but there are other considerations with this horse. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
If Big Brown wins the Belmont Stakes tomorrow, he'll be the first horse in 30 years to win the coveted Triple Crown. But not everyone's excited. Paul Swangard directs the Warsaw Center for Sports Marketing at the University of Oregon.
The underlying theme of some of this horse's baggage has created this sour taste in many people's mouth, where you find people actually rooting against the horse when, in many respects, what the horse has done has been pretty remarkable on the track.
That baggage includes a trainer who's been up for various drug violations, both horse and human, and a majority owner who told tall tales of a successful Wall Street past. Stephen Christ is publisher of Daily Racing Form. He says it's the owner's aggressive business tactics that turn off many fans.
They are planning to leverage their success with this horse into a much vaster fund, which they've likened to a hedge fund. And I think the intrusion of that kind of investment in racing is what's put a few people's noses out of joint.
But some are happy to look at the horse rather than his handlers. Lingering at an off-track betting shop in the middle of the afternoon, this racing fan didn't want to give his name. He said the antics of Big Brown's colourful manager are irrelevant.
He's been suspended. He's had various things happen in his career. But right now he has the horse of a lifetime. and I wish him well.
A horse that, despite being just 3 years old, will only race till the end of this year. After that, Big Brown will focus on siring the next generation of racehorses. His owners have already locked in a return on their investment, regardless of tomorrow's result. A stud farm has paid more than $50 million for his breeding rights. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.